You're listening to The Bill Murphy Show, the daily music interview show featuring the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack, fresh Florida seafood and live music on A1A on world-famous Fort Lauderdale Beach. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And here is your digital broadcast for Tuesday, October 25th, 2011. Yes, brought to you by Lulu's, in part also by PickTheBand.com. They brought us a lot of the fine guests we've had recently. Speaking of fine guests, I have one today. Quite an introduction for this person before we actually hear from him. The creator of at least seven solo albums that I know of. He was a musical director and guitarist for international pop star Olivia Newton-John. Part of the late 80s, early 90s guitar pop metal band Danger Danger. Love this. He was a jazz guitar student at the University of Miami at the U here. You know, can you tell fans, listeners, that I'm into the guitar players? We lean heavily toward guitar players on the show. I'm a big fan. You can hear this guy on a lot of Simon Phillips' amazing records. He's a big deal locally in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They had no problem adopting him as a local musician there because he and his band have been based there for most of the last two decades. In fact, the Dallas Observer Music Awards voted him Musician of the Year 4 years in a row. And today it's the long-awaited release day for his latest. Andy Timmons' band plays Sgt. Pepper. Coming to us somewhere from the Metroplex, it's Andy Timmons. How are you, buddy?
Oh, doing great, Bill. Good to speak to you, man. I'm trying to think what the last time. We've got a little backstory here, you and I, don't we?
Well, yeah, we got a little less than 6 degrees of separation, and we spent some time in Dallas. In fact, a moment that I'll never forget was, my brother Steve played drums for you, I guess last-minute fill-in for a local gig in Dallas.
Yep.
And what did you say? The name of the band is My Buddy Steve's in Town from New York.
Yeah, something like that. So your memory is much better than mine as far as that goes. But who knows what I'm liable to say on stage. But yeah, no, man, your brother is awesome and enjoyed spending time with you back in the day. It's been a few years now.
Yeah, but you know, I've been keeping tabs on you, man. And it's amazing how you've just climbed the ranks of, I mean, you're a guitar player's guitar player now. Do you actually recognize that moniker?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I think if you keep doing what you love long enough, and your heart's in it for the right reasons, things go well. It was interesting you bring up the Danger Danger days because that's going on 20 years ago or over 20 years ago now. So it's almost like another lifetime. But that was such a huge education for me, getting that taste of what it's like, you know, in the mysterious, you know, major label world. At least as it was back then, it's a whole different thing now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, it helped me find myself, so to speak, as far as what I really wanted to do musically. That was a great gig, and it was a chance at what you might call the big leagues at that point. But and so I'll always treasure those memories and the tours that we did. But it also helped me define myself because I was still kind of searching for that. And ever since then, once that situation kind of faded away, I came back to Texas and just really after that, I just wanted to make the music that I really wanted to make. You know, aside from any commercial desires or, you know, worries of success, I just wanted to play guitar and improve myself as a musician. And that's what I've been kind of doing ever since.
You know, it's like you say fading away, though. Let's go back to that. Not really, man. Some really seriously loyal fans that are still around many, many years. The Danger Danger had a, among the, in that genre, you were way on the top of the respected list as far as, you know, the musicality goes of that those bands from that era. You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that. And I remember South Florida particularly being a strong fan base for us. I think one of the biggest shows we ever did was opening for Kiss in Miami, which would have been about 1990 on their Hot in the Shade tour. So at that point was one of the larger crowds we had played for it. I think it was like 8,000 there.
Was that at the old Hollywood Sportatorium, or were you down in Miami Arena that day?
I think it was Miami Arena.
Okay.
But I don't remember. Right. I remember the Button South, though. I'm assuming that's going on now.
Wow, of course, yes. Well, boy, yeah. The Button South memories that we all have down here is amazing.
Yeah, of course. But many, many fond memories for me in South Florida, of course, because I went to University of Miami from 83 to 85, and then many great shows down there with Danger Danger and a few, you know, clinics along the way that I've done independently,
mm-hmm.
just, supporting my music, et cetera. But, Yeah, no. And everywhere I travel, again, I'm not discounting my time with that band because it is a very fond memory in my life. I went on to do my own thing.
I think if someone like kind of looks through your history, your bios, wherever, whatever source it may be, they can kind of put that together because you were in Danger, and you could kind of tell that you were playing, going, hey, you know, there might be something more to this. In fact, I might be able to play this thing all the time and make a living. You know, maybe I could get into some sessions and do some.
To be honest, I mean, I was doing all that before Danger. I was already doing sessions full time. I'd already done a lot of tracks that eventually became my first solo record, Ear Ecstasy. So I was already down that path.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
This kind of came up in the middle of all that. It seemed like a great opportunity, which it was. You know, it really got it got me a lot of exposure and got me a lot of experience on the worldwide stage. You know, we did well overseas as well as doing well here in the States. To a degree, I mean, we weren't as big as, you know, the bigger hair bands or whatever, but we just enough success to realize, okay, this is what it's like. This is cool. It's interesting, but this is not why I do what I do. You know, I didn't pick up the guitar to be rich or famous or,
right.
You know, it's just the pure love of the music. And that was just part of it.
Yeah.
And again, I enjoyed being a part of that and being a team player like in that regard, as much as I do playing with Simon Phillips or as much as I do with Olivia Newton-John. It's just being, you know, as a session player before that, you learn how to be a chameleon and do what's, you know, really proper for each situation that you're in. And that's what's really helped keep me busy all these years.
Yeah.
When you know, the hair band thing fell apart, I always kind of like thought about, man, I feel bad for a lot of the players because what can they really do beyond that? For
right.
me, I just came back to Texas and started doing sessions again, restarted my own solo band career. And so there was a lot for me to do. And it's just the career has just kind of happened along its way without a whole lot of direction from me. It's just, okay, I'll create the music I create and gigs come up and it's a real blessing, man. There's always stuff for me to do, and I never take it for granted.
I was going to say, all the while, you know, counting your blessings that you've been able to make a living with the guitar. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one time that I said something. Somebody asked me back in the Danger days, well, how did you get this gig? You know, and I just kind of off the cuff replied, well, I guess I just got lucky.
Right.
But he called me out on it. He says, you know what, man, this is not luck. You worked your ass off for years, and then when the opportunity arose, you were ready for it. And I couldn't argue with him. You know what I mean? I kind of took that to heart and said, he's right. I have been working my ass off for years. And when the opportunity arose, yeah, there's no doubt there's good fortune and there's luck involved. There's opportunities that are handed to you. But, you know, are you ready at that point? And do you recognize what those opportunities are?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, no, it's all kind of converges together. There's good fortune, certainly. There's opportunity. I was lucky that I grew up with, you know, a mother that raised me that never discouraged me from playing guitar.
Right.
You know, she supported at least the idea that I was passionate about something. So I was fortunate. That allowed me a peaceful atmosphere to just follow my muse, and music was it for me. And I was very fortunate to be able to have the opportunity to pursue it without any roadblocks. You know, I might have done something very different otherwise.
That's awesome. And also the University of Miami education, you were there in I guess the school's, well, their football heyday, to say the least.
And then, and the sad thing is, dude, I know you're a big sports fan, but I didn't attend one game. I wasn't even aware. I was so blinders on. I'm learning. I'm having, you know, the time of my life just working. I mean, I maybe saw the beach four times or so when I lived down there. It's just crazy.
So, wow, you had your head buried in your studies, I guess.
Yeah, I did, man. I was just 24/7 guitar. I was in school all day, you know, getting all this information heaped upon me, but I was applying at night. I was gigging six nights a week. I had a cover band called the Edge, of all things, and we had the house band gig at the Raffles at Dayton Mall.
Oh wow!
And we played six nights a week, you know, starting at 9 o'clock or whatever, or
wow,
at 10 on the weekends, and playing till 2. And so literally six nights a week, I was, you know, playing my Charlie Parker bebop licks, you know, over Borderline by Madonna.
Wow.
You know, so it was all about application. So I grew more in that 2 years than at any other point in my career, easily, just because I was surrounded by brilliant players that have been doing the same thing I've been doing their whole life, you know, trying to just be the best that they can be. And you can either get discouraged or really inspired, because I was surrounded by really heavyweight guys, way better than I was, certainly, you know, at jazz and all the fusion stuff. I was kind of like the rocker at school. You know, I came in with my chops honed in that degree.
Right.
But I wanted to be Mike Stern. I wanted to be Larry Carlton. You know, I wanted to play with Miles Davis is where my aspirations lay at that point.
Well, you didn't want to mess around. It sounded like you wanted to make every minute count while you were at school.
Oh, that's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Very, very.
And not having a girlfriend help too.
No, you know that always. Well, I'm sorry and happy that you didn't have that distraction at the same time.
I'm the poor kid from Indiana. I had a 68 Plymouth Fury, you know, lined up to the Lamborghinis and Porsches, you know, but that's, you know, not a poor kid school, you know, to say the least. But, you know, I paid back student loans for more than 10 years. But, you know, it was so worth it just to be in that atmosphere and be surrounded by such amazing people. It you know, you grow so much.
No doubt. The list of talent that comes out of that school is just too numerous to mention
Absolutely, man.
Now, I know there's a lot of people listening to this because they're big fans and they want to hear this new stuff. You've got a new record out and we're going to play some of it so everybody can hear them. The reason I contacted you in the first place was because I stumbled upon a post on Steve Lukather's site about this record that he had just heard that completely blew him away. And he's a big fan of you. You guys are like mutual guitar gods. And
everybody has to know that, okay, this is like, you know, the only better thing than this would be Paul McCartney to knock on my door and says, "A lucky record, mate." I mean, Steve was by far one of my biggest influences, especially at that time, even, you know, when I was in Miami, because Steve was like in an upper echelon of, yeah, he's a rock guitar player, but he was clearly influenced by guys like Carlton and the jazzier
guys.
Of
course, yeah, easily.
And so, you know, me and Teddy Castellucci, man, he was another guitar player that lived on my dorm floor in Miami at the time, and Toto came to play the James L. Knight Center.
I remember this show well. Yeah.
And then your brother was there too.
Yep.
And we found this out later when he called me the day that the Jeff passed away. But long story short, Teddy and I figured, well, they must be staying at the hotel next to the James L. Knight Center. So we go down that afternoon to stalk and like try to meet Steve Lukather, right? Well, up pulls a tour bus. The band rolls out. Steve's got bus hair. You know, it's all messed up, like he just woke up. He sees me and Teddy across the lobby of the hotel. He comes right to us. He recognized there's a couple of guitar geeks, right? He comes right over to us. He's like, "Hey, I'm Steve Lukather. How you doing?" And we're like, "Oh, wow, you were freaking out." We're just, you know, just unbelievable. And that night meant so many memories. Thank you, Rob. The lovely and talented Rob Apsharian enters the scene here. He's the drummer that we'll be going to Italy with here soon.
Oh, fantastic. Welcome to the show, Rob. Thanks.
He says, "Welcome to the show, Rob. We're doing a little radio here." He's delivering my iced venti Starbucks. It's an hour earlier here in McKinney, Texas. But long story short, that night, another couple of quick memories before we get on with it. I'll never forget this, walking into the venue. You know how they had a scrim up. I think John Parr already played the opening set, but there was a scrim up, you know, so you couldn't see the Toto gear, but you could see the silhouette of Paquero's drums.
Yeah.
And he was sitting at the drum set. And, of course, what was playing over the PA? What plays over every PA system the sound man uses for sound check, right? It's Nightfly.
I was going to say, I thought that was either that or Gaucho. So, okay.
Exactly.
Cool.
So something's deeply there. And there's Jeff playing along with his track, you know. But that night, you know, somehow, I don't know how he did it, but the whole, like, all the guitar guys, you know, the big fans of Luke, we all got front row tickets somehow. I forget how he did it.
Man.
But we're all in the front row. There's like seven or eight of us: Teddy, Brian Monroney, Mike Abbott, all these, Timmy Mitchell, who's been with Shakira forever, all these great, great guitar players. And Luke, if there is, hamming it up. He knows that, okay, these are my guys.
Right.
And he's playing, he's overplaying, and he's having a ball. He's just killing. And then Paquero's back to the whole night. You know, Jeff, Mr. Understatement, right?
Right, right.
He's kind of watching this all night, like shaking his head, you know, just what a ham, right? At the end of the night, they're doing the Rosanna, and, you know, before they go into the big old jam in G at the end, Jeff plays the most ridiculous fill, like, you know, Vinny times 20.
Right.
And he just kind of sits slightly up and looks over his drums, looks at our faces, and sits back down real slowly. Just like, "Here you go, MFs," you know. Oh, it was hysterical. You know?
I'm not going to let this guy steal the thunder of this show.
It was beautiful. It was so
great.
Well done. Anyway, so, but yeah, for Steve to be so kind, and he heard the record, and he sent me like six emails, and but he's always been a really sweet guy to me. And the first time when I released the Ear Ecstasy CD back in 95, I ran into him at a NAMM show, and I handed him the CD, and I said, "Steve, man, you know, you're in so many grooves on this record, so to speak. You know, I've learned so much from you." And about a month later, I get a call on my answering machine, and he just went on and on about, you know, "Dude, I hate you. You suck." So he said the nicest things. I got home that day, and I like welled up a little bit. Like, that's my freaking hero, man. You know?
Wow, man.
So he couldn't be a sweeter guy. Big heart and a big influence. So for him to say these things about the record makes me just, I can retire now. Just about. I'm waiting for Paul to knock on the door.
I think that's coming soon. So yeah.
I'll take it. No, it's very very humbling, very flattering. So off to a good start at this point. No matter what, I'm successful.
No, it's a fair comparison too, because you guys were both sort of melded in the same way, as you said. You know, the jazz into the rock and so forth.
Sure.
So now there's this new record. Andy Timmons' band plays Sgt. Pepper, which was the record Steve was just praising on his Facebook page.
Yeah.
So how long have you been had it in the back of your head? You know, I'd love to do the Sgt. Pepper record guitar instrumental version.
It just kind of fell down the stairs a certain way. The Andy Timmons band had been doing a version of Strawberry Fields Forever on tour, and we were in Italy, and the promoter, you know, clearly saw that. I mean, this song was going over really well every night. People were just connecting with it. And it was him that suggested, "Well, why don't you come back next year and do a whole set of Beatles? This would be great." And I thought, there's no way I can pull this off. A whole set of Beatles, keep it interesting, no lyrics, because I sing some, but we primarily like to just do instrumental and tunes. That's what we do.
Right.
But it got the wheels turning, even though my first thought was like, "Are you kidding me?" But I, you know, I just kind of had the thought in the back of my head, "Well, what if I did it in my life? How would I do that?" And I just started messing around with a variety of Beatles tunes, not thinking of, you know, doing a whole record of one record or the other. But it really became a hobby.
This is a stupid question, but had you heard Jeff Beck on the In My Life record?
Of course, right, of course. I mean, to me, that's one of the greatest Beatle covers ever recorded.
Right.
Oddly enough to say, I'm not a big fan of Beatle cover records. It's hallowed ground, and if you're going to do it, it's really got to be great. And there's been a few that I think have been great, but Jeff, as far as an instrumental version of a Beatles song, to me, that's the pinnacle. Jeff's my favorite guitar player currently. He gets so much emotion out of his instrument and he keeps raising the bar. He keeps getting better. But his recording, which was produced and arranged by George Martin, that's kind of handy.
He's got
the orchestra. He's got that. And so once I went down the path, went, okay, I've got the Sgt. Pepper track. What about A Little Help from My Friends? Lucy in the Sky. Oh, that lays nice on the guitar. I just kind of, you know, before I knew it, I was going down the Sgt. Pepper path. And I went, "Oh, this is going to be fun. Why don't I just see if I can play the whole record?" Just sitting here in my studio, just no bass or drums. I'm just doing all the arrangement on one guitar, which is how I had done the previous record. I did Resolution. There was no overdubs on that record. So I'm supporting all the melodies and stuff I'm incorporating into one guitar performance. So there's no overdubs on this record. It's all me, one guitar performance. And I'm doing all this from memory, I should point out. Another thing that was just kind of fun. Now, I've heard the record enough, clearly. So I was just like, I want it to be how the record plays in my head. So it's just, okay, the melody sticks out there. Oh, this chord. Oh, this chicken. Or this orchestration. I have to play it in a linear fashion, sometimes combining parts. But whatever important parts stick out at a particular moment. But then, as it sunk in, like, well, I'm going to learn this whole record. This is going to be fun. Not thinking of recording it. But then it dawned on me, oh, man, if I do record this, I got to do a day in the life. Follow Jeff Beck. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And I had played his version. I had a band here in Dallas that played for years called the Pawn Kings, P-A-W-N, Pawn Kings. And we, you know, I heard his version. I said, well, I'll have that. And then we used to play that version because I had a Hammond B3 and I could be Jeff Beck for a song. So I had to kind of get his arrangement and version out of my head a little bit. I had to really, really think about Lennon's vocal on it, and I tried to get back to that original feel. And so I think it turned out well. And then the other thing was, like, especially in that section, da 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 da
da da da da da. Right.
That's such a beautiful line, and it sings really well on the guitar. But I didn't have George Martin behind me with an orchestra, so I originally recorded a single note melody, but when I heard the playback, I said, this is really empty. So I had to figure out a way of playing chords with the melody And that was, there was many sections on the record that was a pretty daunting task as far as filling it out harmonically so it didn't sound empty.
Right.
But I think we got a good version of it. I hope there's no comparisons with Jeff Beck because, you know, I'm the beginner and he's the sensei. But,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the beauty of music, no matter what level you get to. You're always striving. There's always that other, you know, collection of guys that just inspire you, and he's at the top of the list for me.
Absolutely, and you know, you answered so many questions that I had planned to ask you about.
I tend to babble. Sorry.
No. I just meant after we played some of this, and I had we were describing A Day in the Life, and in a very similar fashion. Here's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I want to play this.
Correct.
Actually, we'll play this, and then I want to play the opening track from the record too before this is over. Kind of tease everybody with the first two tracks, and then they can go out and get the album because they'll be just sucked in. Now, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, you described how well that lays down with the guitar. Let's take a listen to this and let everybody check it out on this release date of Andy Timmons' band plays Sgt. Pepper, and then I'll have more questions for you about it on the other end.
Awesome, man.
Thank you.
unmistakable melody of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It's Andy Timmons' band plays Sgt. Pepper. That's track two on the record. It follows in the exact order that the original album does, and it's all guitar instrumental versions. All right, Andy, let's get real guitar techie and geeky here.
Right. I got to say, this is the first time I've heard this over the phone. It would make awesome hold music. It sounds great on the phone speaker. That's
awesome. Would be like bonus on hold music. Are you kidding?
Yes, put me back on hold. Come on.
Why do you bank with Bank of America? Oh, because they have Andy Timmons on hold.
Exactly. That'd be awesome. Bank of America? Are you listening, Bank of America?
Yeah, exactly. Good idea. So anyway, so let's get all guitar and techie here. I want to, even in MP3 version here, and we're streaming at pretty good quality, I can definitely detect, man, it's like your ear is right next to the pickup. You can hear...
Right on.
You can hear your pick. You can hear your fingers doing their thing. You always go for that. And I'm just wondering now, in this day and age where everything's virtual and everything's on software and everything's, you know, modeled, that has to be just pure, unadulterated mic'd guitar amp, you know, tubes and the whole deal. What are you using there on that particular track?
Yeah, that's my pod. No.
Yeah, I was gonna. There's no possible way.
But
that's
I really tweaked it to per day. No, no, that's four amps at once. Believe it or not.
There's, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all definitely, you know, there's four amp cabinets running at the same time, and my rig over time has evolved into an all Mesa Boogie rig. You've got vintage Marshalls and Fenders and such, but the folks at Mesa have really been raising the bar sonically for the last, you know, well, forever. Randy's been doing it since the 70s. Randy Smith, the owner, and so many classic tones. But I really gravitated about 5 years ago to their amp called the Lone Star. So the sound you're hearing on that track is actually two Lone Stars made by Mesa, and then another Mesa amp called the Stiletto, which is kind of their version of an EL-34 tube-based British circuitry like the Marshall.
Wow.
It's two Lone Stars and two Stilettos at the same time, and in front of the Stilettos are two old Maestro tape echoes, and splitting the two Lone Stars to get a stereo image. That's one way I would duplicate the double tracked vocals on the record. The Beatles would always double track their vocals to get a thick sound.
Right.
I would use a device called a chorusing with a TC Electronics, and that's how I split that between the two Lone Stars. So when that big D chord comes in, bam, two, three, four, dun, dun,
right.
So I get that big spread of a wide sound, and then it kind of sounds more like the double track vocal. So I would employ that in certain sections. Since I was only using one guitar performance, I'd have four amps. And manipulate those in different ways to kind of broaden the spectrum of the tone. But yeah, and that's been the credo since the Resolution, the preceding CD, is to keep it as natural as possible. There's no EQ, there's no compression on the guitar. It's just mic into the recording medium as simple as possible. Just get the tone right out of the cabinet. You know, move the mic around. Let your fingers do it. Because the more you put in the way, you're going to lose that clarity that you're talking about.
Right.
And that's also the cool thing about not doing multi-layers of guitars, et cetera, which, you know, was kind of the norm for all the guitar instrumental records over the years.
I was going to get right into that. How tempted were you? Because almost every part of the song, you go, oh, wow, there's room for, you know, some split stereo rhythm guitars there. Mm. There's some string patches that could go here. But, I mean, you stayed away from it, man. Less is more.
Yeah, less is more. And again, that it replicates better how I'm. You know, if I would have gone back to reference the record, maybe I would have been more tempted to do that. But once I decided to go down the path, I said I'm going to do it from memory. That way, I'm not doing a cover record, like a literal cover record. Maybe like the Cheap Trick version, which is a great version. But you know, it's a cover band at that point. But this is more of a reinterpretation from my memory. It just seemed more personal in that way. But, you know, and certainly plenty of records I've done in the past, there's been that kind of layering. But I went down this path initially with the Resolution record, and it was kind of something that Steve Vai had said to me when I turned in a previous record to him. There was a song called Falling Down, which was strictly power trio. There was no overdubs. And he mentioned to me when I handed in the record to the label, it was he really liked that song because he could hear the fingers on the frets, exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, wow.
You know, he heard more of the personality. And when we had done the Resolution record, I'd done it in the same way. We were going to do rhythm tracks, and I'd play solos and, you know, layer and double, triple track the melodies. And But it was what Steve said that like kind of it inspired me. I thought, well, because I was pretty tired of instrumental guitar music at that point. It had been done, you know.
Right.
Taking that little nugget of suggestion, it's like, well, what if I could do a whole record like that? So that's what led me down the path on the Resolution record. And I'm so with the Pepper record, I'm just kind of carrying on that mode of like, okay, no overdubs. Let's retain the clarity of the guitar, keep the drums and bass as natural as possible, which is what we did, and just. Let the music, so to speak, just kind of speak through more clearly.
No, you know, and it's great because the listener, and I've already had the opportunity a couple of weeks ahead of time, got my hands on an advanced copy, and you know, just kind of absorbed it in headphones, and really, it takes you on the journey of what you're playing. And I mean, I hope I'm describing this well, but people can actually follow where your fingers are going instead of you cheating with some backup chords between the melody lines. You know, you kind of squeeze them in there. You go, okay, I got a half a measure here to kind of throw in what a rhythm guitar would play right here. And you kind of, you know, the acrobatics that it takes, the skill it takes to get there and get back into the melody is so awesome. And you just kind of take people along on the ride with you. I think it's fantastic. So,
well, you know, the whole thing for me was, it was pure fun. It was pure joy. It kind of dawned on me after I'd finished the whole thing. It's such a full circle melding for me, because the Beatles have been my passion since I can remember. I mean, the very first musical memory I have was the flip side of I want to Hold Your Hand, was I Saw Her Standing There, of course.
Right.
And my favorite part of the song, even though I didn't know what a guitar solo was, with this, when they stopped singing and there was this sound and it was drenched in reverb, and I'm convinced to this day that's why I love a wet guitar sound, you know, it's because the reverb they were getting out of the Studio 3 reverb chamber or whatever it was. But I mean, so that my whole life, I mean, my older brother Mark and my brother John, who were 12 and 8 years older than I, respectively.
Oh, wow.
They bought, you know, I was born in 63, so from the day I was born, they bought every Beatle release that came out, along with Dave Clark 5 and Kinks and Yardbirds, all the British Invasion stuff. But it's literally just been part of my life since day one. So I remember when the Pepper record came out, even though I was 4, it was just such a vibe and such a sound, and the colorful cover, and just nothing else sounded like that.
You're right.
It was so different. And so to try to capture some of that at the level that I'm playing now, if you go through your youth where everything's about speed and everything's about, you know, whatever it might be, that the energy of the youth, now that maybe I'm maturing in a certain way, my playing is hopefully still developing, it just kind of all comes together, and this is so it's the most fun I've had on any record, really, because I'm just playing this music that I love so much, and but trying to raise the bar myself, you know musically.
You had the older brothers that turned you onto that. I had older cousins that are 7 and 10 years older than me that did the same thing. I remember one of my earliest birthdays, I got McCartney's solo record as a little kid.
Oh, wow. Is that the one with that Too Many People? And
no, the one with the cherries on the cover.
Okay.
That would be something, all that stuff.
You know? Oh, yeah. I mean, amazing stuff. Just right. It sounds like, you know, it's him playing all the instruments, right?
Exactly. Oh, yeah, him playing everything. It was just so raw. I mean, we got to be grateful to those people for setting us down the right path, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And even the youth of today, they still kind of keep going back and recognizing the 60s
they
and
sure
70s.
Do.
There was something about it. So,
they sure do. Well, all right, I want to get into some... I know you do a lot of your own studio work, and you've done some recording, so I do want to talk about the process, but first, I know everybody's anxious to hear more. I'm going to just roll this intro under us and check out how the record begins. This is the opening moments of Andy Timmons' band plays Sgt. Pepper. It's being released today, and you're hearing it on The Bill Murphy Show. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, along with a little help from my friends. Love the sustain. Andy Timmons with us on the show. You could just go out and have a bite and come back and it'd be
it's still singing right now, right? It's still Rob's studio down the block, man. It's still going.
You know, we've had some funny moments together. In fact, I think you were the originator of the name of my company that I've been using for the last 8 years.
Murphonics. I saw that on your website.
You came up with the term.
I saw that. I couldn't remember if it was Steve or I, because it all melds together at some point. But Murphonics. That's right. We were in your apartment. Were you living in Arlington? Where was that?
Well, I was living in Irving, but I think that the term Murphonics came up earlier than that. It was in the very first early days of Dolby Pro Logic 5.1, and my brother was like, every time you'd show up at his house, he would play the first few minutes of Terminator for you to see, check out my home theater. And the way I remember this story is you were sitting around with Steve and a couple other guys, and you said, yeah, I saw the movie. I didn't see it in Murphonics like you do over at Steve's house. And the term stuck, so...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, again, things happen so quickly.
You know, and I think the humor that you have, I mean, your personality, I mean, we got to admit, everybody's talent and everybody's work, you know, is a product of who they are. And I think you just have this personality that, I mean, you can kind of feel and hear in your music. It's so enjoyable. You make guitar like... I don't know. It's I don't know how to describe it. It's like, it's so cool, you know. You make it so it's not only technically accurate and it's not only, you know, musically accurate, but it's also very cool. It's got enough of that. I guess you've got enough metal in you to make whatever music you're playing, you can have the heaviest of the metalheads go, yeah, man, that's great. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to make good music, and hopefully it appeals to everybody. You know
that, right?
But you just, again, it's just down to you gotta make yourself happy first. You gotta do what's really what comes natural, what's in your heart.
And right.
As lame as that is to say, but it's so true. You know, it's like I can't do it any other way at this point. So, but if it's connecting, it makes me very happy.
Can we get the violin music playing, please, in the background?
Yeah, good Lord.
All right, and just a couple more minutes of more recording geeky techie stuff, because
sure.
We have a lot of those folks listening. So I know a lot of the Ear Ecstasy stuff, and man, the Spoken and Unspoken is still one of my favorites. I know you recorded that yourself, more or less.
More or less, yeah. Mostly done at my home studio, which was, another blessing and a curse. But
right. And how much of that are you doing now, or how much of it have you, handed over to people that just do that?
Yeah, and that was my learning curve on the Spoken and the Unspoken, was that it was really enjoyable in some ways, because I did it all at my house, and you know, we did some drums, a couple drum tracks at a proper studio. But what I learned was, recording technology had become so affordable at that point. Everybody had a home studio. You got ADAT tapes and an O2, a Yamaha O2R board, and you're off and running making records, and it sounds good. And but the problem was, I was sitting at home alone doing it. So you're the engineer, producer, and artist at the same time, and I was driving myself crazy. I just didn't realize I was driving myself crazy until I was already crazy.
Right.
I mean, it really several things happen. You know, every other record I've made, you know, you've got somebody, at least one other person in the room with you at all times, because I always relied on Rob Wexler, my longtime friend and engineer, you know, to not only get great sounds, but to be that sounding board and say, you know, 20 takes ago was fine. You could have stopped a long time ago, but in your head, you're like, oh, that sucked. Oh, no, I got to do it again. It's not quite what I was looking for. And you don't really have that objective perspective that you need. And plus, there's a certain energy that happens when there's even just one other person in the room. You play differently.
No doubt.
You've got, especially when it's a set of ears that you really respect and you love the person, you want to... You know, you're on a little bit more. You know, you got to really.
Yeah, you know, that instant kind of, what's the word? That instant reaction that you normally would get in a studio with a bunch of cats around when you're doing it yourself. You have to wait till the next day. And you're like,
hey,
listen to what I tracked last night. What do you think of the guitar part? And now you're hearing it 14 hours later, you know?
Right. And again, it's, you know, but it was a great experience. And I learned a lot just as an engineer. And, you know, whatever knowledge you gain in those applications, it's really valuable. And I still do some things on my own here because it's fun.
Right.
But I much prefer to do, you know, work with other people that kind of, they've got their dedicated expertise. And, you know, so like the guitar tracks for the Resolution record, I recorded at Mike Dane's studio. He's the bass player I've worked with for 20 plus years and great engineer on his own. And so he helped me on those tones, and it was a great experience. And then I did the all the guitar stuff with Rob Wexler again on this record, though about half the tracks we got live in the studio, because by the time we recorded the record, I pretty much knew exactly what I wanted to do. And then about the other half, I thought I could improve upon. So we spent some time with that and tweaking tones and getting the tuning right. That's the hardest thing about doing chord melodies, which essentially a lot of the recording on the Pepper record is kind of from a jazzer mentality of like, okay, I've got the melody, but I got to support it chordally. It gets really difficult tuning wise, especially when you introduce distortion into the tone, because that magnifies all the impurities of the guitar tuning.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's an imperfect instrument, and it takes quite a bit to figure that out along the way. But many guys like Eric Johnson certainly have it figured out.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to write the book.
Right, exactly.
It's like, Andy, here's what you do.
Now, another thing, that this era that you've played in and grown in has really seen, you know, the run the gamut as far as technology goes. Now, you painstakingly, you know, record the actual guitar amp so that you get the tube sound and you can feel your fingers on there. And when you first recorded back in the 80s, it was on 2-inch tape and it was on vinyl. And then you went for CDs for most of the next decade.
Yeah.
Now we're in the MP3 era, and people, you know, by the time the listener hears your record, it's now been it's been mixed down, it's been truncated, it's, you know, been dithered, and now it's down at a, you know, very not as much dynamic range. Is it a frustrating thing to you, or are you just kind of like everybody else going, oh, well, that's just the way it is right now?
Well, I mean, there's a degree of that. I mean, it's not going to keep me from putting the effort in on the front end of it, though.
Right, of course.
I mean, because even if you can dither down and dumb down this recording at this point, like you even said on the MP3, I mean, it still comes through. I mean, yeah, if I was recording through my pod or my Zoom, it's gonna sound a lot worse by the time you get it.
And let's face it,
coming through your computer speakers, but
and you were joking about it coming through the phone and sounding great, but you know, the fact of the matter is, over the phone, you can still really hear those finger impacts and stuff. You know what I mean?
It kind of sounded better. I'm gonna get a phone plug in and put it on the next record. No, it sounded really good to me. So I thought this is a good sign from your computer to the phone to me. I'm, you know, on a wireless handheld, whatever, you know. Okay, we'll take it. But you know, it's always worth the effort. It's always worth the time. I mean, because that's the passion of it. That's the love for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's such a journey, and you just keep on it.
Right. Absolutely, man. Andy Timmons, this has been a treat. And so, how's things going over there in Italy in the middle of this tour?
No. Well, exactly. Speaking to you from wherever I am today.
Right. And,
not Texas.
Just so people know, we recorded this ahead of time so that we could put it out on the release date. But you, as this is being premiered, are you doing some shows over in Italy? And so how much touring? How much on the road stuff is going to be going on in 2011 here?
You know, it looks like for now, right, it's just this little Italian run that we've got. Italy has been particularly kind to the Andy Timmons band. We tour there about once a year, and they've just been so amazingly supportive. But we're working on dates for the States, which has been something that we haven't done.
Wow.
To be honest, we've primarily traveled Europe and in Japan.
No, you're another one of those guys that's appreciated far more overseas than you are here.
Yeah, well, I think it's partially that, but it's partially exposure too. Because by the time, you know, I was really starting to come into my own as far as my instrumental career, you know, I've got a family now. So getting in a van and not making any money in clubs across the States isn't really an option.
Well,
so
you know,
it's gonna take getting on as an opening act for somebody like Satriani or Vi or that type of thing. That will give us the next level of exposure, and that's what we're kind of hoping we can get going.
You
but we're gonna
You can go ahead and blame it on the radio industry here in the United States, how it doesn't appreciate the artistic music like yours.
But you know what, though, I mean, Bill, obviously now that the playing field has been leveled, it's all about the internet.
Yeah.
So it was a quote from Elvis Costello years ago. He wasn't foreseeing the internet situation, but he just said, you know, make the music you want to make. Just try to make great art. And at some point, it might be thousands of years, but somebody's going to discover it at the bottom of the ocean. You know, the good stuff will be recognized. But now with the internet, okay, you don't have to wait 1,000 years.
It's true.
It's all there. If it's something of quality, people are going to tell other people about it.
Right.
that's the, you know, we've got radio, yeah, but I mean, that's the MTV and radio of today. It's all accessible. There can be a kid sitting in his bedroom in Tulsa recording amazing guitar work, and next thing you know, it's Andy McKee, you know, with millions and millions and millions of views and touring 300 dates out of the year.
No, you're absolutely right. And so, for the, you know, for that matter, anybody listening to this that wants to turn other people onto this new record can spread the link for this show, and it goes on and on and on, and the machine moves on, and it really only the cream rises to the top. You know?
Well, that's the hope anyway, and we all keep doing it in hopes of reaching folks in that way. But so please tell a few million of your best friends.
No doubt.
Tweets and Facebooks and all that. It's pretty awesome.
Like, you know? Andy Timmons on Facebook, if he even has any room for any more likes on there.
Well, I've got the Andy Timmons official page. Yeah, the friend page maxed out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can't even get in there, so.
I get angry. You've got too many friends. That wasn't the idea. I was just looking for a way of getting the word out about some gigs, you know. But next thing you know, it's high quality problems, I reckon. Right.
You know? It's something to look at when you're not feeling good about yourself. Go look at your Facebook friends
list.
Yeah, you know?
Occasionally there's haters out there, but luckily I've been largely unscathed. But that's bound to happen, though, the more people
like him on Facebook, go and pick up the album. You know, obviously the best thing to do would get a hard copy of the CD, as we were talking about the quality, but you have to download it. You got to download it.
You got to download it. That's right. But yeah, andytimmons.com, we're doing a pre-sale where the first 500 orders that come through, you get a band signed, 8x10.
Oh, cool.
Suitable for framing, I must say. It's very attractive.
Very,
Sergeant Sergeant Peppery colors.
And you got a nice new Sergeant Pepper haircut for the album and everything?
Of course.
It's been a real treat, my brother. And
thank you, Bill.
Glad to catch up with you. When you get back off the road, maybe we'll do a follow-up and see how things are going.
That would be awesome.
All right, man. Give my best to the Metroplex, and best of luck on that tour that you're already on.
Thank you, and rock on with Murphonics.
Thanks, brother. Andy Timmons joining us. Do share the show and spread the news. Share this on your Facebook page and spread it around for Andy, and look for him in an upcoming States tour date. Let's hope it happens. All right, brother, we'll catch you soon.
Thank you, Rob.
Tune in tomorrow and or the next day and the day after for more new stuff right here at BillMurphyShow.com.
Subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.